Okay, today's reading, obviously I'm not Ajahn Pasano, I just want to put it into context why he's not doing this reading. The session that was recorded, the readings that I'm going to do today were actually done by Ajahn Pasano, but during the transfer from the MP3 player to the computer, they were lost by my mistake, so I offered to try and rectify that as much as possible. Unfortunately, the commentary that Ajahn Pasano offered, along with his skilled reading, and also questions and answers that took place during that session, are lost. So all I can really do is replace the readings, the sutta readings, so that they'll be available for people. So apologies, and please bear with me. The first of the readings is actually the last in the section of modulation and fine tuning. And it's from Anguttara 6, it's the Anguttara 6's number 55. So in case anybody wants to read this later on. So, thus have I heard. On one occasion, the Blessed One was dwelling at Rajagaha on Mount Vulture Peak. On that occasion, the Venerable Sona was dwelling in the cool forest near Rajagaha. While the Venerable Sona dwelt there alone and secluded, this thought occurred to him. I'm one of the most energetic disciples of the Blessed One, yet my mind has not attained liberation from the taints by non-clinging. Now my family is wealthy, and I can enjoy my wealth and do meritorious deeds. Let me then give up the training, return to the lower state of a layman, enjoy my wealth, and do meritorious deeds. Then the Blessed One, perceiving in his own mind the Venerable Sona's thoughts, left Mount Vulture Peak, and as speedily as a strong man might stretch his bent arm or bend his stretched arm, he appeared in the cool forest before the Venerable Sona. There he sat down on a seat prepared for him. The Venerable Sona, having paid homage to the Blessed One, sat down to one side, and the Blessed One said to him, Sona, weren't you just now thinking of giving up the training and returning to lay life? Yes, Lord. Tell me, Sona, when in earlier days you lived at home, were you not skilled in playing the lute? Yes, Lord. And Sona, when the strings of your lute were too taut, was your lute well tuned and easy to play? No, Lord. And when the strings of your lute were too loose, was your lute well tuned and easy to play? No, Lord. But Sona, when the strings of your lute were neither too taut nor too loose, but adjusted to an even pitch, was your lute then well-tuned and easy to play? Yes, Lord. Similarly, Sona, if energy is applied too forcefully, it will lead to restlessness, and if energy is too lax, it will lead to lassitude. Therefore, Sona, keep your energy in balance, penetrate to a balance of the spiritual faculties, and there seize your object. Yes, Lord, the Venerable Sona replied in assent. When the Blessed One had admonished the Venerable Sona with his exhortation, he vanished instantly from the cool forest and appeared again on Mount Vulture Peak. Afterwards, the Venerable Sona kept his energy balanced, penetrated to a balance of the spiritual faculties, and there seized his object. And the Venerable Sona, living alone and secluded, diligent, ardent, and resolute, soon realized here and now, by his own direct knowledge, that unsurpassed goal of the holy life, for the sake of which sons of good family rightly go forth from home to the homeless life, and entering upon it, he dwelt therein. And he knew, destroyed his birth, the holy life has been lived, what had to be done has been done, there is no more of this world. And the Venerable Sona became one of the Arahants. Having reached Arahantship, the Venerable Sona thought, let me go to the Blessed One and in his presence declare final knowledge. And the Venerable Sona went to the Blessed One, paid homage to him, and sat down to one side. So seated, he said to the Blessed One, a monk, O Lord, who is an Arahant, one with taints destroyed, who has lived the holy life, done his task, laid down the burden, attained his goal, discarded the fetters of becoming, and is liberated by final knowledge. He is dedicated to six things. He is dedicated to renunciation, to solitude, to non-harming, to the destruction of craving, to the destruction of clinging, and to non-confusion. Perhaps, Lord, one of the venerables here might think, Could it be that this Venerable One is dedicated to renunciation just by relying on faith alone? But one should not see it in that way. A monk with taints destroyed, who has lived the holy life, done his task, and does not see in himself anything still to be done or to be added to what was done, such a one is dedicated to renunciation because he is free from lust through the destruction of lust, because he is free from hatred through the destruction of hatred, because he is free from delusion through the absence of delusion. Perhaps, Lord, one of the Venerable Ones here might think, could it be that this Venerable One is dedicated to solitude because he hankers after gain, honor, and fame? And could it be that he is dedicated to non-harming because he thinks it essential to adhere to rules and vows? But one should not see it in that way. A monk with taints destroyed, who has lived the holy life, done his task, and does not see in himself anything still to be done or to be added to what was done, such a one is dedicated to solitude, dedicated to non-harming because he is free from lust through the destruction of lust, because he is free from hatred through the destruction of hatred, because he is free from delusion through the absence of delusion. It is because of his destruction of lust, hatred, and delusion, because of their absence, that he is dedicated to the destruction of craving, dedicated to the destruction of clinging, dedicated to non-confusion. Lord, even if forms cognizable by the eye strongly impinge on the eye faculty of a monk with a fully liberated mind, they do not overpower his mind. His heart remains untinged by them, firm and imperturbable. He contemplates their transience. Even if sounds cognizable by the ear, odors cognizable by the nose, tastes cognizable by the tongue, tactile objects cognizable by the body, mind objects cognizable by the mind strongly impinged on the mind faculty of a monk with a fully liberated mind, they do not overpower his mind. His heart remains untinged by them, firm and imperturbable. He contemplates their transience. If, Lord, there were a rocky mountain of one solid mass, without clefts or fissures, and from any of the four directions a tempestuous rainstorm should lash down upon it, that rock could not be moved by it, could not be shaken, could not be stirred. Similarly, even very strong sense impressions will not overpower a monk whose mind is fully liberated. His mind remains untinged by them, firm and imperturbable. He contemplates their transience. And this is followed by a verse. If one is bent on renunciation and solitude, intent on harmlessness, on the end of clinging, if one is bent on an end to craving, dedicated to unconfused vision, when one has seen the arising of the sense bases, one's mind will be entirely released. For the monk thus freed, with peaceful mind, there is no need to add to what he has done, no further task or duty to perform. Just as a rocky mountain is not moved by storms, so sights, sounds, tastes, smells, contacts, and ideas, whether desirable or undesirable, will never stir one of steady nature, whose mind is firm and free, who sees how all things pass. So just as a reminder, that's the Anguttara Sixes, number 55. And that completes the section on modulation and fine tuning. And then that day, Ajahn Pasno went straight into the next section of the series. And the overall title is Strength and Joy. And it begins with a prologue from the Anguttara Fours, number 14. And this is called The Cultivation of Enlightenment Factors. Bhikkhus, there are these four efforts. What for? The effort to restrain, the effort to abandon, the effort to cultivate, and the effort to attend. What, bhikkhus, is the effort to restrain? In this case, bhikkhus, seeing an object with the eye, one is not entranced by its general features or specific details. And then this goes through all the other ones. When hearing a sound, when tasting something, when sensing something, when thinking something, and when perceiving something. I think I may have left one out, so I'll leave that to you to figure out. What, bhikkhus, is the effort to abandon? In this case, bhikkhus, one does not go along with a sensual thought that has arisen, but abandons it. Then it also goes through all the other states. So, actually, I'm going to read that one again, okay? This is the second section of this short prologue. What, bhikkhus, is the effort to abandon? In this case, bhikkhus, one does not go along with a sensual thought that has arisen, but abandons it. And so on, with you go through the same thing with cruel thoughts or unwholesome states. What, bhikkhus, is the effort to cultivate? In this case, bhikkhus, one cultivates the enlightenment factor that is mindfulness, based on seclusion, based on dispassion, based on cessation, and ripening in self-relinquishment. One cultivates the enlightenment factor, which is investigation of Dhamma, investigation of energy, investigation of rapture, investigation of tranquility, investigation of concentration, investigation of equanimity, based on seclusion, based on dispassion, based on cessation, and ripening in self-relinquishment. What, bhikkhus, is the effort to attend? In this case, bhikkhus, one attends a suitable meditation object. And then it goes through the same formula as the last three. So here again, as a reminder, that's the Anguttara Fours, number 14. Okay, the next reading is from the Samyutta 46, number 3. Which appears in volume, it's in volume 2, so. And, okay, Samyutta 46, number 3. The title is Virtue. Bhikkhus, those bhikkhus who are accomplished in virtue, accomplished in concentration, accomplished in wisdom, accomplished in liberation, accomplished in the knowledge and vision of a liberation, even the sight of those bhikkhus is helpful. I say, even listening to them, even approaching them, even attending on them, even recollecting them, even going forth after them is helpful, I say. For what reason? Because when one has heard the Dhamma from such bhikkhus, one dwells withdrawn by ways of two kinds of withdrawal, withdrawal of body and withdrawal of mind. Dwelling thus withdrawn, one recollects that Dhamma and thinks it over. Whenever a bhikkhu dwelling thus withdrawn recollects that Dhamma and thinks it over, on that occasion the enlightenment factor of mindfulness is aroused by the bhikkhu. On that occasion the bhikkhu develops the enlightenment factor of mindfulness. On that occasion the enlightenment factor of mindfulness comes to fulfillment by development in the bhikkhu. Dwelling thus mindfully, he discriminates that Dhamma with wisdom, examines it, makes an investigation of it. Whenever a bhikkhu dwelling thus mindfully discriminates that Dhamma with wisdom, examines it, makes an investigation of it, on that occasion the enlightenment factor of discrimination of states is aroused by the bhikkhu. On that occasion the bhikkhu develops the enlightenment factor of discrimination of states. On that occasion, the enlightenment factor of discrimination of states comes to fulfillment by development in the bhikkhu. While he discriminates that Dhamma with wisdom, examines it, makes an investigation of it, his energy is aroused without slackening. Whenever a bhikkhu's energy is aroused without slackening as he discriminates that Dhamma with wisdom, examines it, makes an investigation of it, on that occasion the enlightenment factor of energy is aroused by the bhikkhu. On that occasion the bhikkhu develops the enlightenment factor of energy. On that occasion the enlightenment factor of energy comes to fulfillment by development in the bhikkhu. When his energy is aroused, there arises in him spiritual rapture. Whenever bhikkhu's spiritual rapture arises in a bhikkhu whose energy is aroused, on that occasion the enlightenment factor of rapture is aroused by the bhikkhu. On that occasion, the bhikkhu develops the enlightenment factor of rapture. On that occasion, the enlightenment factor of rapture comes to fulfillment by development in the bhikkhu. For one whose mind is uplifted by rapture, the body becomes tranquil, and the mind becomes tranquil. Whenever bhikkhus, the body becomes tranquil and the mind becomes tranquil, in a bhikkhu whose mind is uplifted by rapture, on that occasion the enlightenment factor of tranquility is aroused by the bhikkhu. On that occasion the bhikkhu develops the enlightenment factor of tranquility. On that occasion the enlightenment factor of tranquility comes to fulfillment by development in the bhikkhu. For one whose body is tranquil and who is happy, the mind becomes concentrated. Whenever bhikkhus, the mind becomes concentrated in a bhikkhu whose body is tranquil and who is happy, on that occasion the enlightenment factor of concentration is aroused by the bhikkhu. On that occasion the bhikkhu develops the enlightenment factor of concentration. On that occasion the enlightenment factor of concentration comes to fulfillment by development in the bhikkhu. He closely looks on with equanimity at the mind thus concentrated. Whenever bhikkhus, a bhikkhu closely looks on with equanimity at the mind thus concentrated, on that occasion the enlightenment factor of equanimity is aroused by the bhikkhu. On that occasion the bhikkhu develops the enlightenment factor of equanimity. On that occasion the enlightenment factor of equanimity comes to fulfillment by development in the bhikkhu. Bhikkhus, when these seven factors of enlightenment have been developed and cultivated in this way, seven fruits and benefits may be expected. What are the seven fruits and benefits? One attains final knowledge early in this life. If one does not attain final knowledge early in this life, then one attains final knowledge at the time of death. If one does not attain final knowledge early in this very life or at the time of death, then with the utter destruction of the five lower fetters, one becomes an attainer of Nibbana in the interval. If one does not attain final knowledge early in this life and does not attain final knowledge at the time of death, or become an attainer of Nibbana in the interval, then with the utter destruction of the five lower fetters, one becomes an attainer of Nibbana upon landing. If one does not attain final knowledge early in this life, and so forth through to destroying the five lower fetters, one becomes an attainer of Nibbana upon landing. Then, with the utter destruction of the five lower fetters, one becomes an attainer of Nibbana without exertion. If one does not attain final knowledge early in this life, and goes all the way through to, or become an attainer of Nibbana without exertion, then with the utter destruction of the five lower fetters, one becomes an attainer of Nibbana with exertion. If one does not attain final knowledge early in this life, and then through to, or become an attainer of Nibbana with exertion, then with the utter destruction of the five lower fetters, one becomes one bound upstream, heading towards the Akanita realm. When bhikkhus, the seven factors of enlightenment have been developed and cultivated in this way, these seven fruits and benefits may be expected. So, just reminding again, that's from the Sanyutta 46 and number 3. Okay, there's just one more sutta from that day of readings. And it's from the Majjhima Nikaya, sutta number 118, the Anapanasati Sutta. And it's just reading through from section 23, which is the through to the end of the sutta, so it's sort of near the end of that sutta. And how, bhikkhus, does mindfulness of breathing developed and cultivated fulfill the four foundations of mindfulness? Bhikkhus, on whatever occasion a bhikkhu, breathing in long, understands, I breathe in long. Or breathing out long, understands, I breathe out long. Breathing in short, understands, I breathe in short. Or breathing out short, understands, I breathe out short. Trains thus. I shall breathe in experiencing the whole body. Trains thus. I shall breathe out experiencing the whole body. Trains thus. I shall breathe in tranquilizing the bodily formation. Trains thus. I shall breathe out tranquilizing the bodily formation. On that occasion, a bhikkhu abides contemplating the body as a body, ardent, fully aware, and mindful, having put away covetousness and grief for the world. I say that this is a certain body among the bodies, namely, in-breathing and out-breathing. That is why on that occasion, a bhikkhu abides contemplating the body as a body, ardent, fully aware, and mindful, having put away covetousness and grief for the world. Bhikkhus, on whatever occasion a bhikkhu trains thus, I shall breathe in experiencing rapture, trains thus. I shall breathe out experiencing rapture, trains thus. I shall breathe in experiencing pleasure, trains thus. I shall breathe out experiencing pleasure, trains thus. I shall breathe in experiencing the mental formation, trains thus. I shall breathe out experiencing the mental formation, trains thus. I shall breathe in tranquilizing the mental formation, trains thus. I shall breathe out tranquilizing the mental formation. On that occasion, a bhikkhu abides contemplating feelings as feelings, ardent, fully aware, and mindful, having put away covetousness and grief for the world. I say that this is a certain feeling among the feelings, namely, giving close attention to in-breathing and out-breathing. That is why on that occasion, a bhikkhu abides contemplating feelings as feelings, ardent, fully aware, and mindful, having put away covetousness and grief for the world. Bhikkhus, on whatever occasion a bhikkhu trains thus, I shall breathe in experiencing the mind, trains thus. I shall breathe out experiencing the mind, trains thus. I shall breathe in gladdening the mind, trains thus. I shall breathe out gladdening the mind, trains thus. I shall breathe in concentrating the mind, trains thus. I shall breathe out concentrating the mind, trains thus. I shall breathe in liberating the mind, trains thus. I shall breathe out liberating the mind. On that occasion, a bhikkhu abides contemplating mind as mind, ardent, fully aware and mindful, having put away covetousness and grief for the world. I do not say that there is the development of mindfulness of breathing for one who is forgetful, who is not fully aware. That is why on that occasion, a bhikkhu abides contemplating mind as mind, ardent, fully aware and mindful, having put away covetousness and grief for the world. Bhikkhus, on whatever occasion a bhikkhu trains thus, I shall breathe in contemplating impermanence, trains thus. I shall breathe out contemplating impermanence, trains thus. I shall breathe in contemplating fading away, trains thus. I shall breathe out contemplating fading away, trains thus. I shall breathe in contemplating cessation, trains thus. I shall breathe out contemplating cessation, trains thus. I shall breathe in contemplating relinquishment, trains thus. I shall breathe out contemplating relinquishment. On that occasion, a bhikkhu abides contemplating mind objects as mind objects, ardent, fully aware and mindful, having put away covetousness and grief for the world. Having seen with wisdom the abandoning of covetousness and grief, he closely looks on with equanimity. That is why on that occasion, a bhikkhu abides contemplating mind objects as mind objects, ardent, fully aware and mindful, having put away covetousness and grief for the world. Bhikkhus, That is how mindfulness of breathing, developed and cultivated, fulfills the four foundations of mindfulness. And how, bhikkhus, do the four foundations of mindfulness developed and cultivated fulfill the seven enlightenment factors? Bhikkhus, on whatever occasion a bhikkhu abides contemplating the body as a body, ardent, fully aware and mindful, having put away covetousness and grief for the world, on that occasion unremitting mindfulness is established in him. On whatever occasion unremitting mindfulness is established in a bhikkhu, on that occasion, the mindfulness enlightenment factor is aroused in him, and he develops it, and by development, it comes to fulfillment in him. Abiding thus mindful, he investigates and examines that state with wisdom and embarks upon a full inquiry into it. On whatever occasion, abiding thus mindfully, a bhikkhu investigates and examines that state with wisdom and embarks upon a full inquiry into it, on that occasion, the investigation of states, enlightenment factor, is aroused in him, and he develops it, and by development, it comes to fulfillment in him. In one who investigates and examines that state with wisdom, and embarks upon a full inquiry into it, tireless energy is aroused. On whatever occasion tireless energy is aroused in a bhikkhu who investigates and examines that state with wisdom, and embarks upon a full inquiry into it, on that occasion the energy enlightenment factor is aroused in him, and he develops it, and by development it comes to fulfillment in him. In one who has aroused energy, unworldly rapture arises. On whatever occasion unworldly rapture arises in a bhikkhu who has aroused energy, on that occasion the rapture enlightenment factor is aroused in him, and he develops it, and by development it comes to fulfillment in him. In one who is rapturous, the body and the mind become tranquil. On whatever occasion the body and the mind become tranquil in a bhikkhu who is rapturous, on that occasion the tranquility enlightenment factor is aroused in him, and he develops it, and by development it comes to fulfillment in him. In one whose body is tranquil and who feels pleasure, the mind becomes concentrated. On whatever occasion the mind becomes concentrated in a bhikkhu whose body is tranquil and who feels pleasure, on that occasion the concentration enlightenment factor is aroused in him, and he develops it, and by development it comes to fulfillment in him. He closely looks on with equanimity at the mind thus concentrated. On whatever occasion a bhikkhu closely looks on with equanimity at the mind thus concentrated, on that occasion the equanimity enlightenment factor is aroused in him, and he develops it, and by development it comes to fulfillment in him. Bhikkhus, on whatever occasion a bhikkhu abides contemplating feelings as feelings, ardent, fully aware and mindful, having put away covetousness and grief for the world, and then it repeats as it did earlier, through the earlier section of this sutta. The equanimity enlightenment factor is aroused in him, and he develops it, and by development it comes to fulfillment in him. Bhikkhus, on whatever occasion a bhikkhu abides contemplating mind as mind, ardent, fully aware and mindful, having put away covetousness and grief for the world, and here again it goes through that whole sequence, the equanimity enlightenment factor is aroused in me, and he develops it, and by development, it comes to fulfillment in him. Bhikkhus, on whatever occasion a bhikkhu abides contemplating mind object as mind objects, ardent, fully aware and mindful, having put away covetousness and grief for the world, and once again it goes through the whole formula, the equanimity enlightenment factor is aroused in him, and he develops it, and by development it comes to fulfillment in him. Bhikkhus, that is how the four foundations of mindfulness developed and cultivated fulfill the seven enlightenment factors. And how, bhikkhus, do the seven enlightenment factors developed and cultivated fulfill true knowledge and deliverance? Here, bhikkhus, a bhikkhu develops the mindfulness enlightenment factor, which is supported by seclusion, dispassion, and cessation, and ripens in relinquishment. He develops the investigation of states enlightenment factor, the energy enlightenment factor, the rapture enlightenment factor, the tranquility enlightenment factor, the concentration enlightenment factor, the equanimity enlightenment factor, which is supported by seclusion, dispassion, and cessation, and ripens in relinquishment. Bhikkhus, that is how the seven enlightenment factors developed and cultivated fulfill true knowledge and deliverance. That is what the Blessed One said. The bhikkhus were satisfied and delighted in the Blessed One's words. So that concludes the readings that were offered by Ajahn Pasno that day. And just as a reminder of that last one, that was the Majjhima 118, starting from section 23, straight through to the end. And that's all from the section, the overall title being Strength and Joy.